was done by a lot of people who go through
control, Houston, less than 3 minutes away now from scheduled time of ignition. As we look at one of our displays in the Mission Control Center, we see that Apollo 13's lunar module is now in program 40. That's the descent propulsion system thrusting program.
It's in 40 seconds to go on the mark. Mark. That was standby.
What was that, Mark?
Standby. That was incorrect. 3 minutes. Counting down to 3 minutes, and I'll give you a mark, and I'll take into consideration 2 seconds. Mark.
They allow 2 seconds for the signal to travel that far.
And that mark means, Frank, I know you know this, but the mark means simply that they both systems of clocks here on
79
the
hours and 25 minutes
are identical now.
Apollo 13 now at a distance of 5,349 nautical miles away from the moon. Velocity now reading 4,564 feet per second relative to the moon.
Frank, I think it's important to point out that if this, if they make a mistake here, or if something doesn't work properly, it could throw the spacecraft off its course, but they have arranged it so that they are not using all the fuel in that engine, and they could have a second engine firing to bring it back on course again.
Indeed they could, and if necessary, they even have the fuel left in the ascent stage of the limb that they could use for this purpose.
So that really what we're watching is
less than 2 minutes away now from scheduled time of ignition. Velocity reading 4,560 feet per second. Distance from the moon 5,383 nautical miles.
I say again that this burn will last about 4 minutes and 20 seconds. It's intended to increase their speed by 850 feet per second, which is about 595 miles an hour. Its real purpose is to adjust their route home.
Ground confirms ignition.
Good.
Well, Bernie, 40%.
Houston copies.
Burning at 40% of thrust now. They will go up to maximum thrust.
Attitude looks good at this point.
Roger.
This burn is likely to last, this will last for about another 4.5 minutes.
Houston, you're looking good.
Roger.
1 minute now into the burn.
Getting on those consoles in Mission Control information on the increased speed of the spacecraft and of its attitude in flight. If it's moving from side to side, they can tell it in this room. They can tell how much fuel is being expended in this burn of this engine. They can tell the rate at which it's being expended. So they know a great deal right there on that floor that you're looking at now about this maneuver being carried on some quarter of a million miles out in space.
Dips is looking good, 2 minutes into the burn.
Have about another 2 minutes and 20 seconds to go if it goes normally.
The dips looking good.
Well, you were looking good at 2 minutes. Still looking good.
2 minutes, Roger.
Velocity building up. Disky shows we've gained 451 feet per second at this time.
That's a little more than half what they wanted. This, of course, means Descent Propulsion System, DPS.
Reports to Flight Director Gene Kranz indicate all systems are looking good. Coming up on 3 minutes into the burn.
Brass, you're go at 3 minutes.
Fire, Hydra.
Onboard display shows less than a minute to go in the burn now. Coming up on 4 minutes into the burn.
Shutting down.
Shut down.
Roger, shut down.
That was Commander Jim Lovell reporting shut down. The engine is off. We're at 79 hours, 32 minutes into the flight.
Well, from what we could hear, it all went perfectly. Burn started on time. Burned as long as it was supposed to. We'll be reading out shortly.
Are you reading 1640, Houston?
Roger, we're reading it. 1:15.
We're checking your gauges and dials on board.
Roger, very small.
Comparing notes with the mission control.
Control. 79 hours, 33 minutes, 5,707 nautical miles out from the moon at this time.
I say that was a good burn.
Roger, now we want to power down as soon as possible.
Roger, understand.
Trying to control the electrical power. What it means is, it means the crew will get back to Earth 10 hours earlier. But for these men who've gone through that really grueling experience in space, with the limited number of supplies they have aboard the spacecraft, 10 hours is quite a significant amount of time. Don't you think, Frank?
I would want to get back to
79 hours.
Go
ahead.
Maybe you just read off the circuit breaker you wanted to power down as you did yesterday for us.
Okay, we have a procedure ready to send up to you here in about 2 minutes. Let us know when you're all ready to take it.
That's Vance Brand, an astronaut.
Okay.
Talking to them.
Okay, is it going to be better to write this on a blank page, Vance, or can we use some portion of the power down, let's say, in a contingency bump that already says?
Standby one.
And standing up and stretching there, as you can see on your screen, is Gene Kranz, the tallest man in shirt sleeves, hands on hips now. I would suppose feeling more relaxed than he did a few moments ago. Although throughout the day, more and more sureness has manifested itself around mission control. Thank you.
Frank McGee?
Yes, John.
I would think that we would not expect a lot of talk after this final arrangement for powering down that they're going to discuss in a minute or so for the rest of the evening. I think that a good bit of their work in a really extraordinary day in space has now ended.
Yes, it has, and the conclusion to be drawn at this moment is that they had, I think they mentioned, very little residuals, meaning that they burned almost exactly the amount of fuel that they wanted to burn in the length of time they wanted to burn it. And you all heard someone in Mission Control, I think it was Vance Brand, say, I would call that a good burn. So the conclusion to be drawn at this moment is that it did work on time and as long as it was supposed to, so their path should be adjusted so they come down in the Pacific where they want them to, where we all want them to.
Slight delay here, Jim. It'll be a couple of minutes before we read that up to you. And we're looking at the contingency checklist. Power down.
The spacecraft engine now has added, because they burned it there at a high rate of speed for a while, it's added about 500 miles an hour to the spacecraft's speed as it goes through space. And this means that while the course, as I understand it, has not been changed, it means the arrival time on the Earth has been changed by some 10 hours, according to NASA officials who are working this out. The space agency has computed its figures now and says that the Friday splashdown in the Pacific should come at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, give or take, and they're still computing the figures, and part of the figures that have to be computed involve the actual speed of the spacecraft now, which is being computed at this moment here in Houston, and they'll get a better fix on the time in which it lands. But it was a speed-up maneuver to bring them home more quickly and to save every precious drop and every precious ampere of water and power aboard that spacecraft. Frank?
Thank you, John, very much. Jim Arch, you've been sitting there watching all this and listening to it. How did it strike you?
Frank, in effect, they've done everything they need to do now to get back. I think at one during one flight, if I recall, it was level. One of the controllers asked him who was set to controls, who was flying. And he said, well, Sir Isaac Newton is as much as anybody else, because they're strictly operating by the laws of physics now. They're on a trajectory headed for a certain point. Nothing can change that. They don't need to make any more burns, maybe a few little minor course corrections, but that would be done with a different system, and it's very minor. So now they are headed back, and as you and John were both saying, there's a great sense of relief, I'm sure, in Mission Control now.
I'm sure there is, too. Although, as John was trying to say a bit earlier and didn't get a chance to, the really crucial burn was made early this morning.
3:42 this morning.
You would recall.
Yes,
you know,
I think
you were right here. 3:42 this morning when they adjusted their trajectory so that they would get in the position, actually, to do what they did tonight.
That's right.
The problem that they've had on this flight was massive, of course, and can't be diminished, nor does anybody want to try to diminish it. But their recovery from it has been brilliant.
That's part of their training, and it's not to minimize any of the problems that they've had, but they go through this in simulators, and it's part of the flight plan. It is, I think, as you pointed out earlier this evening, if something had gone wrong in a different way, this burn was planned. The only thing that was different about it was that they were using this extra propulsion system in a way that they'd hoped they hadn't, wouldn't have to. The computers really aren't set up for the lunar module to run the whole system.
Mm-hmm.
The problem was when they had the power failure in the main spacecraft, the little lunar lander had to take over all this, and as it turned out, it's done very, very well.
For a tug. John, anything you'd like to add?
I'm listening.
Well, good for you.
Nautical
6,003 nautical miles.
Traveling at a speed of 4,980 feet per second.
4,980 feet per second. If you want to multiply that by 0.7, you can get the miles per hour. It's going fast. It's going away. It's going away from the moon, having successfully done what they'd planned to do this evening, to burn that engine, to bring it home more quickly. And now, having done that, they will be going soon into a session between Mission Control here and the astronauts in the spacecraft, telling them what machines they can turn off in the spacecraft to husband and conserve the fuel that they have left in it. And after that, we have nothing else on our schedule here at Houston that would indicate any particular activity. One man will always stay awake on watch guarding that equipment. And I guess that cleans it up here at the Manned Spacecraft Center, Frank McGee.
And thank you, John, for a good day's work. We've been told that this engine burn, which was just performed, will send Apollo 13 on a course for Earth, resulting in a splashdown on Friday in the South Pacific Ocean. Now, exactly when and where that splashdown will occur is still a matter of estimate, but the following is the best information that we have right now. The Apollo 13 should impact about 1,100 nautical miles northeast of Auckland, New Zealand, on Friday, shortly afternoon, Eastern Time. It will be 6 a.m. local time, or just about dawn in that part of the world. And the prime recovery vessel, the United States Navy aircraft carrier Iwo Jima, is on the way. Right now, it's about 400 miles from the recovery area and is expected to arrive on the scene tomorrow night. And two Air Force rescue planes from Hickam Air Force Base in Hawaii will also be in the area on recovery day. That's about all we can tell you. They're safe and they're on their way home. The burn that was needed to refine their course so that they would land in the Pacific has been accomplished. And we will now promise you again that we'll keep you informed on anything that happens between now and the splashdown. But for the moment, all seems well. This is Frank McGee, NBC News. Good evening.
Stay tuned to NBC for continuing coverage of the flight of Apollo 13. This program was brought to you by Gulf, which has omitted its commercials.
And so it has been a day of great concern for the president. We're told that the state dinner tonight was brief, friendly, but subdued, and that the president's thoughts are with the Apollo 13 astronauts, as are those of all others at the White House tonight. Bill Gill, ABC News, Washington.
And ABC News tonight has learned that there may be a long gap between U.S. space flights after Apollo 13's near tragedy, and they're not down yet. Apollo 14 had been scheduled to fly with astronauts Alan Shepard as commander on October 1st of this year. It was to have been NASA's first nighttime launch, a 3 a.m. launch, but there is now reason to think that it may be a year or more before America's next manned space flight, and indeed the entire future of lunar space flights by this country is now in doubt. Dr. Thomas Paine, the NASA administrator, late today appointed a special investigating panel, though he calls it an advisory panel, with astronaut Frank Borman, Deputy Administrator Chuck Matthews, and many of the top officials on it, to find out exactly what went wrong, what caused this explosion or meteorite hit that nearly took the lives of Lovell, Hayes, and Swigert. It may be many, many months, if at all, before the true cause of this near tragedy is known, and of course, it may never be known. There were also some anomalies associated with the launch of the Saturn V last Saturday, and a thorough investigation is now in order, so we should not count on Apollo 14 taking place in October. This hour, or rather an hour and a half, about 45 minutes ago, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, was designated by Congress, the Congress of this country, as a time for a minute of prayer across the nation for the safe return of the three astronauts. And that return, the chances of that return, does now seem safer than at any time in the last 24 hours, but it's still far from a sure thing. The next 55 hours are going to be ticklish, perilous, and a time of tension for all of us and for Lovell, Hayes, and Swigert. This is Jules Bergman at ABC Space Headquarters.
Night and day ordeal, the crippled Apollo is on its way home, heading toward Mother Earth. And President Nixon picks a man from the North as his third try at filling a Supreme Court vacancy. Much of the world is watching and listening and hoping tonight, well aware that three brave men are in trouble in deep space. It began almost 24 hours ago, while we were on the air, last night, and ever since, the Apollo 13 moon mission has been bathed in the spotlight of nervous tension. Among the elite core of space-oriented experts who have been keeping track of each important development is our own award-winning science editor, Ken Gilmore.
Well, I think it was as critical, perhaps probably the most critical situation we've faced so far in the manned spaceflight program in flight. We are about 70 hours from home, and we think we have the situation in control. We've projected the consumables as I've described, and we have a plan for carrying out the rest of the mission, but there is going to be no relaxation at all as far as that goes from now until splash.
Fred Hayes had just taken viewers for a tour of the LEM, the lunar landing module, last night about 9:30. And as the telecast ended, there was no hint of trouble. Then, just as the TV show ended, it struck, whatever it was. The astronauts said they heard a loud bang, then the oxygen gauges began plunging toward zero. At the same time, they could see clouds of some substance spewing out of the side of the service module. The spaceship was cruising along like this, the command and service module on the right, the LEM on the left. It was about 200,000 miles from Earth and scheduled to swing behind the moon shortly after 7 o'clock tonight. The trouble developed in the service module, the unit behind the command module that contains the fuel cells that generate electrical energy for the spaceship, and, among other things, the oxygen tanks that fuel it. There are at least two possibilities as to what happened. One is that the ship was hit by a meteorite, which punctured a tank or fuel cell. The other is that something, a tank, a valve, a fitting, a connector, gave way explosively. Some favor one explanation, some another. The trouble is that nobody knows. But the big question immediately after the accident is what could be done to save the crewmen. Since the command module was rapidly dying as its electrical power faded, Lovell and Hayes crawled through the tunnel into the LEM and powered its systems with its self-contained batteries. Then they turned on its breathing oxygen. That meant that, at that point, they were temporarily safe. But there was a major problem. On Monday, during a mid-course correction maneuver, the men had given up their free return capability in order to get in closer to the moon for a pinpoint landing. In other words, they would not now automatically swing around the moon and return to Earth if they did nothing further. So early this morning, at this point, they fired the descent engine of the LEM, the one they had planned to use to lower themselves to the moon and thus re-established a free return orbit. Unfortunately, they could not put themselves into the best possible orbit. That firing last night would have put them down in the Indian Ocean, where there are no recovery forces, and it would not have got them back to Earth until Saturday. So tonight, just about 20 minutes ago, after they had looped around the moon and reached this point, they fired the LEM engine once again, this time to correct their orbit so that they can land in the Pacific on Friday near the originally scheduled spot where a recovery fleet is waiting. Here's how that firing went.
Control says that his table looks good. Attitude looks good at this point.
Full throttle.
Full throttle point. Now it's full power, full throttle.
As the ship cruised along, we got these reports. Of course, there was no television picture because they're keeping all of the systems turned off in order to watch the electricity and keep it burning as little as possible. When those fuel cells went out last night, space officials were at first concerned that the men might run out of the four essential substances, consumables, as the spacemen called them. The four were oxygen for breathing, water both for drinking and for keeping the spacecraft cool, electric power, and lithium hydroxide, which absorbs the carbon dioxide the men breathe and thus keeps the air fresh. The calculations last night showed that each of those precious consumables could be made to last. Oxygen was the least of the problems. There's enough in the LEM now to last the three men some 125 hours, about 50 hours or 2 days more than they need to get home. By shutting down all unnecessary devices that use electricity, they can operate on the LEM's batteries until re-entry.
Good. Control says looking good.
And still have a safety margin. Shutting down the electrical equipment will also reduce the amount of cooling water needed, and there should be plenty enough to last until midday Friday. Burn going well, he says. Finally, by taking the used lithium hydroxide out of the now shut-down command module and using it to purify the air in the LEM's oxygen system, there should be enough of that. So, barring further catastrophe, the men should not run out of anything essential to life that they need to get home. The only final step was this burn you're seeing replayed right now. This took place about 20 minutes ago. We'll be getting the final word on that in a moment. Halfway there, the burn lasted 3 or 4 minutes.
Guidance looking good. All points. Still good.
We're now approaching the end of that burn. Held in mission control as they waited for the outcome. Once this burn is complete, the men can coast all of the way home. If they do need small course correction burns later in the course, they've got plenty of fuel left for them. The scientific objectives of Apollo 13 were scrubbed, of course, since that emergency last night. But perhaps not everything was lost. They were scheduled to take photographs as they went behind the moon tonight. We haven't heard yet whether they had time to do that or not. Burn just about over now. We'll be getting the word any second. Every man in mission control.
Shut ready. Down. Shut down. Engine off.
It was almost anticlimactic. Shut down, shut down, engine off. And it was a successful burn. So right now, Lovell, Hayes, and Schweigert are on the way home. They're scheduled to splash down in the Pacific not far from the original target site about 1 o'clock Friday afternoon. And right now, their chances of making it appear good. Bill?
Like you, Ken, there are the men in space alone, the men on the ground at the Houston Space Center trying to get them down safely, and the men at sea waiting for a splash that will mean the end of the troubled mission, and of course the families of the astronauts who are emotionally more involved than anyone at this moment. Marilyn Lovell was composed as she chatted with the astronaut's doctor during a telecast from space last night. But that was just before her husband, James, realized something was radically wrong with his ship. And 4-year-old Jeff was the only member of the Lovell family to come out to Earth today. During the crisis, he headed for nursery school as usual. Dr. Leonard Schweigert, the father of astronaut John, went to work with a smile, and the quip in Denver, Colorado, apparently not worried. The White House has been watching the space accident drama closely, and so have millions of people in this country and all over the world. Rollin Smith and George Sharman report.
President Nixon was kept informed of the Apollo trouble throughout the night. His press secretary, Ron Ziegler, said Mr. Nixon was concerned and had direct and immediate communications with Houston. In fact, the president conferred twice with NASA Director Robert Payne in Houston and journeyed to the Goddard Space Center outside of Washington today for a complete briefing. Tonight, Mr. Nixon hosted the Danish Prime Minister, Hilmar Bumsgaard, at an official White House dinner, and at the official welcoming ceremony today, Apollo was foremost on the two leaders' minds.
The Danish delegation were deeply concerned last night about the news of the difficulty with the Apollo 13 flight assumption. But the U.S. have accomplished in space is so remarkable and outstanding, and we know how very qualified the people in NASA are. Our confidence and prayers follow the brave and able astronauts for a safe return to Earth.
Other expressions of hope and sympathy were given, and Britain said its Royal Navy ships would be placed at the disposal of any rescue operations for Apollo if they were asked to do so. French President Georges Pompidou ordered the French fleet under state of alert to be ready for any recovery, and Brazil's Navy and Air Force were alerted for a possible rescue operation off their coast if for any reason the Apollo had to come down in the Atlantic.
Churches and synagogues across the nation held special prayer services today for the safe return of the astronauts. Here in New York, prayers were said at the regular masses of St. Patrick's Cathedral and Temple Emmanuel, made arrangements for tonight, tomorrow, and at each of the afternoon services until the crew of the troubled Apollo 13 had landed safely. At St. Patrick's, worshippers arrived early for the working people's mass at 5:30, and many said they would offer their prayers, asking for a safe homeward journey for astronauts James Lovell, Fred Hayes, and John Swaggart. As the mass began and the congregation stood in silence, the celebrant of the mass began his sermon with the hopeful prayer that God would guide their safe return. St. Patrick's has announced there will also be a special mass at noon Friday, about an hour before the scheduled landing of Apollo 13. Some people are digging into the non-scientific, the superstitious side of the Apollo 13 affair, as you might expect, pointing out the coincidence of the number 13 in all of this. But one man on the ground has some reason to consider the role that fate played for him. Tom Mattingly, the astronaut who was scratched for the mission at the very last moment because of his exposure to German measles, has some thoughts about the predicament that he would be in right now if it weren't for the deep disappointment he endured just a few days ago. The White House tries again for the United States Supreme Court, and we'll have details in just a moment.
Recently at the White House and talked with the Houston Space Center several times today by telephone. He was described as concerned, but also enormously impressed by the coolness of those involved. The President took time today to welcome the Danish Prime Minister to the White House, and the Danish leader reflected some of the worldwide concern over the Apollo mission.
Rocket firing puts Apollo 13 astronauts on course toward home and a 1 o'clock Friday splashdown, and President Nixon nominates a non-Southerner to the Supreme Court. I'm Bob Young, details coming up. Good evening, everyone. This is the 11 o'clock report, and I'm Bob Young. As the world waited, America's Apollo astronauts tonight headed for home in their disabled spaceship. Science editor Earl Ubel reports on that space drama.
The Apollo 13 crew, safe from a brush with catastrophe, are now speeding homeward to the green and blue planet Earth. They're not completely out of danger. Their spaceship, already put to one supreme test, could not really stand another failure. At 9:40 p.m., they fire the rocket of their lunar lander to put themselves on a track towards splashdown, 660 miles southeast of Pango Pango at 1 p.m. Friday. The rocket fired perfectly for 4 minutes, 24 seconds. The spidery lunar lander did the work because the big service rocket at the other end is dead, disabled by an explosion, some say a meteorite impact, in the oxygen supply. Some say it was due to some short circuit. The oxygen is vital for the production of electricity, as well as for keeping the astronauts breathing. So now, the service and command module is dark. Its machinery is stiff. The lunar lander supplies it with oxygen, with electricity, guidance, and rocket power. It will keep the men alive until they approach the Earth. And then they will shift to the command ship, this, which can bear the heat of re-entering the atmosphere. Now, for the past few days, they've been traveling through space. And this, then, is their path through the sky. For example, this is the Earth, and here the Moon. They took off, and here their trouble began, that explosion. If they had done nothing more, their path would have taken them out into space. But they fired a rocket early this morning, which put them behind the Moon, and then at 9:40 tonight, they fired that rocket again to put them back down into the Pacific Ocean on Friday. Flight controller Glenn Lunny said that this trip was one of the grimmest yet faced by any astronaut.
Right now, with the water that we have in the lunar module, deep in and ascent tanks, we can follow the profile that we have intended to follow, that is powering down the primary guidance system after the first burn, and power it up two more times for mid-courses, and land with still about 12 or 13 hours of water of cooling available. So that is beginning to look like we are in reasonable shape there. We are also studying some ways, possibly getting some more water into the cooling system, and we're not sure how those are going to work yet. On the batteries, we again are planning to follow a course which will end up with about 500 or so amp hours left, which is about 22% of the current or the power available in the lunar module, so that's beginning to look like a fairly comfortable margin. Of course, that is dependent upon following the power profile that we've laid out, and you'll hear people talking about a couple of amps all the way back, and the intention is to follow the profile. We are about 70 hours from home, and we think we have the situation in control. We've projected the consumables as I've described, and we have a plan for carrying out the rest of the mission, but there is going to be no relaxation at all as far as that goes from now until flight.
What was the most critical single thing that had to be done last night? Was it getting that reference platform set up on the LEM before the collapse of the command and service module power?
Well, in my opinion, the most critical thing was people keeping cool and getting done what had to be done. And I think we were able to do that. I think especially the pilots remained cool throughout the whole thing, and so far we've been able to stabilize the situation, and we have every intention of keeping it that way.
And science editor Ubell will be back later in this broadcast with up-to-the-minute details on Apollo 13. The wives of astronauts Lovell and Hayes prayed today for their safe return, and both Marilyn Lovell and Mary Hayes expressed confidence that those prayers will be answered. John Swigert Jr. is unmarried, and his father, a Denver eye doctor, told CBS News correspondent Ike Pappas that he too has faith that his son will make it home safely.
Well, I'm very happy that everything has turned out as well as it has. Of course, I'm still concerned, but I think this, with the hope that I have and the faith that I have, that everything will be all right.
How is Mrs. Schweiger holding up?
She's, I think, is probably kind of cracking up a little bit with this continual worry. She's probably more emotional than anyone would think. She hides it very well up to a point.
Dr. Schweiger, what are your thoughts of your son up there now?
Well, I'm just praying that he's doing everything that should be done, and that Lord will help him out in some way.
And President Nixon cut short a state dinner this evening to keep an eye on television during the crucial rocket firing of the Apollo. And we'll have back with an update on the Apollo 13 situation. Here's science editor Earl Ubell. Earl?
There's new trouble aboard Apollo 13. The technicians don't know how serious it is yet, but it could put the three men aboard in new danger. There is carbon dioxide building up in that cabin. That gas comes from all of us. We breathe in oxygen, use it to burn carbon for energy, and we breathe out carbon dioxide. Now, inside that cabin, they use chemicals to absorb the carbon dioxide, but something doesn't seem to be working. The carbon dioxide is building up, and in order to sweep it out of the cabin, the men may have to use some of their valuable oxygen, and they don't want to use that. The trouble came after they had successfully fired their rocket, which put them onto a trajectory which would land them in the Pacific Ocean at 1 p.m. Friday. They seemed safe, and they still seem safe. To repeat, there's new trouble, but the men don't know how serious it will be. Bob?
Thank you, Earl. The weather will be a crucial factor, too, in the Apollo splashdown at approximately 1 p.m. on Friday, and there is a storm lurking near the primary recovery area, 600 miles southeast of Pango Pango in the South Pacific. Meteorologist Bob Weaver reports now on what may be expected there, as well as provides the local weather outlook. Bob?
Well, thank you, Bob. Let's all say that they will land successfully in the area intended. And if you have a map at home, if you take the 20-degree line, which comes across North Australia, and then move it out to near the Cook Islands, you will have the approximate landing position. Now, there is that tropical storm Helen, but it's going to move towards the southeast. The latest reports now would indicate the tropical storm Helen has weakened. She had 40-knot winds. Now she has 35-knot winds in her at this time, and further weakening is expected. But even if she doesn't weaken, as long as she doesn't intensify too much, the general weather for the area Friday for touchdown looks like this. They'll have an 8/10 sky cover, 1,500 scattered. They'll have some high, broken clouds. The wind should be mostly out of the west at about 15 knots. The seas will be up about 5 feet. They'll have good visibility, about 10 miles. Now, this, of course, is not vertical visibility. This is horizontal visibility at 10 miles. Temperature when they land will be 75 degrees, and there will be some scattered showers through the area because as the storm passes, it will leave some residual cloudiness, and there will be some residual weather in the area. But all in all, if everything goes according to plan, they will be on the best side of the storm by the time they touch down, which means they should get some clearing at that time and improved weather conditions. So let's look at our weather.
The Apollo 13 astronauts had a new but relatively minor problem. Stay tuned for details next on the 11th Hour News. This is the 11th Hour News, produced by NBC News and brought to you in color by Trans World Airlines. Somehow you feel more important on TWA. And by the Bank of New York, the bank that manages money. Here is Jim Hart.
Good evening. The crippled, trouble-plagued, unlucky Apollo 13 is on its way home, coasting through space with its lights off and its power down. 2 hours ago, a course correction was made as it circled the moon, and if all goes well, splashdown should occur in the Southwest Pacific Friday afternoon. But there is a new, nettlesome, but not considered serious problem now. For a late report, here is NBC News correspondent Sander Van Oker.
A new problem has developed in Apollo 13. Astronauts Lovell, Hayes, and Swigert say that carbon dioxide is building up within the spacecraft. Apollo 13 is equipped with lithium hydroxide canisters to cleanse the air of carbon dioxide. Mission Control in Houston has ordered the astronauts to link one of the canisters up with a plastic tape and stocking to the air system. The situation might force the astronauts, and we use the word might, to use more of their limited oxygen in an effort to clear their cabin of foul air. Mission Control says the problem had been expected. Earlier this evening, the spacecraft circled the moon. After passing beyond the dark side of the moon, the engine on the lunar module was fired again, setting both the lunar module and the crippled command module on a course toward Earth. The astronauts are now on a course that should allow them, barring unforeseen difficulties, to make a splashdown at around 1 p.m. Eastern Time, Friday afternoon, at a point in the South Pacific about 1,100 miles northeast of Auckland, New Zealand. The U.S. Navy carrier Iwo Jima is now less than 400 miles away, and it's expected to be in the recovery area sometime tomorrow. Two Air Rescue Service airplanes from Hickam Air Force Base in Hawaii are also being dispatched to the scene to assist in the rescue effort. There is a tropical storm in the recovery area, but weather forecasters say the storm stands a good chance of missing the target point. And so even with a crippled spacecraft, the astronauts apparently have enough oxygen, apparently have enough food, backup, electrical power, and water to survive the journey back to Earth. Officials of the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston are expressing guarded optimism that the men will be brought home safely. They say that all events considered, things are looking up. This is Sander Van Oker, NBC News, reporting.
NBC News. Stay with NBC for the latest developments in the return flight of Apollo 13. Coverage includes special programming later tonight here on NBC.
Stay with NBC News for latest reports on the Apollo 13 spacecraft as it continues on a course towards splashdown in the Pacific on Friday. Complete coverage of the mission's progress on most of these NBC stations.
We delay the start of our regularly scheduled program for an Apollo 13 progress report. Brought to you by Gulf Oil.
Mission Control will soon send Apollo 13 the figures for making a mid-course correction tonight. Some errors apparently have crept into the spacecraft's computers. The correction will restore Apollo 13 to a course that aims it at a Pacific splashdown Friday afternoon. Astronaut Fred Hayes reported hearing a thump in the lunar module's descent stage, and he said he saw some debris go by the window. But Houston said its instrument showed that nothing was wrong. Sander Van Oker, NBC News, reporting.
Stay tuned to NBC for continuing coverage of Apollo 13, brought to you by Gulf.
The Pacific recovery zone today was cloudy, a rather grim day, but it has been brightening. Clouds have been slowly lifting, and spaceflight meteorologists expect an improving trend to continue through tomorrow and Friday. I'd like to show you the satellite photograph of that part of the country. I should say the nation. Notice that there's a great deal of cloudiness that's just over here. This is a tropical storm, Helen. That storm, with winds of up to 30 and 40 miles an hour, has been practically stationary. It seems to be drifting very slowly. It's difficult to say yet
This is the coast of Australia, and this is the recovery zone. As you can see, quite a bit of cloudiness, some breaks in the clouds, and some showers. We expect that this will be moving slowly off to the west, and there might be some residual cloudiness in the forecast for Friday at the moment, with the partly cloudy skies, the chance of some of these showers moving through the area, with easterly winds.